What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer. We're three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for four seasons now, doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live. And this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. So we're going to start the show off today, as we always seem to start Tuesday shows, talking about a big injury on the Chargers, because Melvin Ingram injured his hamstring during the game on Sunday against the Dolphins, so he's going to miss some time, and Sean Colkin tore his Achilles and will be done for the season. So we're starting there. Before getting into our patented segments, what went wrong and then what went right, getting into this game against the Dolphins a little bit deeper to wrap up the show today. So let's go ahead and get into it, guys. This is your Locked On Chargers lead story. I'm Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer. Melvin Ingram injured his hamstring in Sunday's game against the Dolphins in the first half, was unable to return in the second half. Keenan Allen said that he had to basically stop Melvin Ingram from trying to get on the field because he wanted to get back in there so badly, and I don't blame him with the Chargers racking up four sacks in the second half. But Melvin Ingram, we now know, will miss some time. Ian Rapoport reported today that Ingram is expected to miss some time, and it's likely going to be a couple of weeks. We just saw Michael Davis injure his hamstring the first week of the season against the Colts. He returned 3 weeks later. He ends up missing two games, but didn't end up missing a major amount of time. Obviously, every injury is different. But David, add it to the list of all of the important Chargers that are injured. I mean, you get Michael Davis back and you lose Melvin Ingram to go along with Derwin James and Adrian Phillips and the rest of the guys that you've been missing this season. And even though Melvin Ingram hasn't put up crazy sack numbers this year, he is still a vital part of this defense. He is the captain. The Chargers are going to sorely miss him. Even if you didn't see the numbers that might suggest the Chargers are going to miss him, not having him out there, replacing him with a mixture of Isaac Rochelle and Uchenna Nwosu, is going to definitely hurt the Chargers some. You're not going to be able to replace the talent of Melvin Ingram's level, but the Chargers should be used to it by now because they've had to replace so many pieces on this team. And David, at some point, you have to question the conditioning staff, the strength staff. We've already done this before in so many seasons prior to this. It seemed when Anthony Lynn took over that the injuries were going down a little bit, at least as far as the soft tissue injuries, the non-torn ACL and crucial injuries like that that are very hard to predict. The smaller stuff seemed to go down when Anthony Lynn took over, but this year it seems like they're breaking records with how many injuries they've had, and now Melvin Ingram, another key piece, is down.
Yeah, I mean, if you look on the injury list, you got an all-star team there for the Chargers just sitting there all battered and bruised. But yeah, I mean, the Chargers can't afford to worry about that. Unfortunately, it's next man up. They got to try to replace some of that value. Obviously, you mentioned you're not going to be able to replace Melvin Ingram completely with, you know, even a couple of players. I mean, he doesn't have the big sack numbers this year, but he's done a lot of the dirty work with Joey Bosa in the running game, which directly resulted in an improved run defense. So yeah, it definitely sucks to have him out. But I mean, like I said, I mean, the Chargers have to have the mentality next man up.
And that's been their mantra all season long, and they haven't really had a choice. If you're the coaching staff, you can't really say that the next guy isn't going to be able to do it, because you have to keep these players' morale up. And it gets tough when you see so many guys on the sideline having to cheer their teammates on. And once again, the Chargers find themselves as one of the most injured teams in the entire NFL. And it just seems like deja vu for Charger fans who have lived this the last few seasons. I mean, Keenan Allen early in his career, Melvin Ingram himself early in his career, Joey Bosa, you name it. The Chargers have had giant injuries at those positions. Jason Verrett never got really on the field. So another injury that happened in Sunday's game, a little less important, but a very thin position for the Chargers, was Sean Colkin tearing his Achilles, a really brutal injury on a play where Phillip Rivers kind of floated a ball over the top to him near the goal line, and he caught it kind of awkwardly. You saw him in extreme discomfort as soon as he caught it, and he couldn't even make it into the end zone. He seemed to know that something pretty bad had happened, and of course, that's confirmed. Lance Kendricks was the only healthy tight end at that point on the roster, And now with Virgil Green still uncertain, Lance Kendrick still is basically the only healthy tight end on the roster, David. So a lot of people are wondering if this means the door is open for former Charger Antonio Gates. And I'm inclined to agree with them. And either way, the Chargers are going to have to bring someone else in.
Yeah, especially because we don't have no timetable on Hunter Henry. We have no idea when he's going to be ready. They even toyed around a little bit with putting Derek Watt at tight end. So that's an interesting development to potentially keep your eye on. But yeah, I mean, how could you not think about the possibility of bringing in a future Hall of Famer, a player that's, you know, a cornerstone player in your organization's history? You know, he's available. He even said on a TMZ video that, hey, I'm ready to go. He was talking about the Melvin Gordon situation, but he said, hey, I'm ready to play. And I'm sure there's got to be a lot of temptation there just because of that familiarity. I don't know if the Chargers are going to make that decision. I mean, I guess that really is contingent on how far Hunter Henry is away, but I think they absolutely have to place a phone call. I mean, what else do they have to lose at this point?
And they can use a receiving threat, if you can call him that at this age. He still found a way to have 30 catches last year when the Chargers really needed him. So he's definitely has some gas left in the tank, or at least he did last year. So the fit makes a lot of sense when, you know, him and your quarterback, Phillip Rivers, have the most touchdowns between a quarterback and a tight end. When Hunter Henry went down, they didn't bring him in. They brought in Lance Kendricks instead, which made it seem like maybe the Antonio Gates chapter was over. But this is just the next page in that book, because the Chargers have a huge need again at tight end and not a clear option to fill it. But we do have two more segments to get into, talking about what went wrong in Sunday's game against the Dolphins before wrapping the show up like we always do on Tuesdays with what went right and end it on a positive note. But before we get into that, guys, I need to tell you that if you're going to bet on football this season, there's only one place you should be putting your money, and that is MyBookie. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and MyBookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play, and it's where you should too. John also plays there, and John, you won some money this weekend on MyBookie again.
I did. I turned about $5 into about $41.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, making eight times your money. So if you guys need tips on MyBookie, make sure to just direct message John on Twitter at Biggest Charger Fan. But it's so easy, guys. MyBookie makes it so easy for you and lays everything out for you. And I wouldn't be telling you to bet with them if they weren't the best. And right now, I can even give you some free money, because MyBookie will double your first deposit when you use the promo code Locked On. That's all caps, one word, to activate the offer. That's promo code Locked On at MyBookie.ag today. You can get some free money, guys, and win some free money. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. I also need to tell you guys about our friends over at Metro Infinity, the best car dealership in California. You have to swing by and check out their brand new multi-million dollar facility and check out the amazing selection of new and used cars. And you can find Metro Infinity just off the 210 in Monrovia. They are the number one volume dealer in California. The best part about Metro Infinity is, guys, you don't even have to go see that brand new facility if you don't want to. I would recommend it, but you don't have to, because Metro Infinity will bring your car and the paperwork to your home or office and complete the whole transaction there. If you guys go into Metro Infinity, make sure to tell them that Locked On Chargers sent you, and they will give you another $500 off of any car purchase. They take pride in not being your typical car dealer where it takes hours to buy a car. They don't play games, and they want their customers to have a luxury car buying experience. Trust me, guys, these guys get it. If you're thinking about a new Infiniti or even in the market for any new car, please give them a chance to earn your business. Believe me, you will not regret it. They also have over 50 certified pre-owned Infinitis in stock. You can reach them at 626-599-7510 or at metroinfinity.com. And when you talk to them, make sure to tell them that Locked On Chargers sent you. All right, guys, time to get into the next segment of the day, talking about what went wrong in the Chargers game against the Dolphins. And when the score at halftime should be 17-16 and you get bailed out by the Dolphins missing a couple of field goals, there's definitely some things to point to as to what went wrong in this game. And John always comes with it in this segment. So we're going to start with you, John Kegley. I know you have a list prepared of all the things that went wrong in this game. So why don't we let everyone know, looking a little deeper into this game, what exactly went wrong?
Well, let's start with another slow start by the Chargers. And without, if it wasn't for this being a horrible team, we could be seeing another loss. You went up against probably the worst team in the league and probably of the decade and still started off slow. Like, other teams come in fired up, ready to go. We come out like, okay, it's another day in the office. Let's get this done with. And then it takes like a quarter and a half and it's like, okay, it's time to get down to business. We're ready for this now. Like, what is taking so long to get started at the beginning of the game? No one's even hyped up and ready to go except for Rivers and Keenan. Other than that, everybody else just makes a tackle, gets back to the huddle. Okay, next play.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I think another thing that went wrong in this game has to be the fact that the Chargers couldn't get pressure in the first half by just the four down linemen. I mean, they were struggling to get in Josh Rosen's face. They gave him a plethora of very easy throws, which for a quarterback like Josh Rosen, who will make mistakes, the last thing you want to give him time to do whatever he wants and have time to really process what the defense is trying to do. And on the flip side of that, I thought that the Chargers' run defense was pretty shaky in the first half as well. They did make some good adjustments. Kenyon Drake ran it 9 times for 45 yards. You definitely don't want to be giving up that kind of average to the other team starting running back and one of the few weapons that they had. You knew they were going to come into this game with a similar game plan that the Patriots had, which is double team Joey Bosa or Melvin Ingram at the point of attack and run the ball right at them. And we saw that work with some success for the Dolphins. So for me, for the defensive line, I know the Chargers got 5 sacks. I didn't think the defensive line had a great game in this one. In a game, David, where they got to go up against one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL and an offensive line that wasn't even fully healthy. Like, their starter couldn't even play in this one. And the Chargers still at times struggled to stop the run and struggled to get after Josh Rosen with only 4 rushers.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no excuse for that performance in the first half. I mean, they started super slow, and it looked like Josh Rosen was getting some confidence after a couple of really easy throws, pitch and catch, because he had all the time in the world to make decisions. But then in the second half, things got switched. Gus Bradley started sending some pressure from different places, and then you saw a plethora of mistakes at that point. But it definitely took them a while for them to get running. For me, what I saw that went wrong is more penalties and penalties wiping big plays off the board. It's just a bad trend that has continued in this game. It's got to stop.
Yeah, the penalties were definitely an issue again in this game. I mean, 10 penalties for 89 yards. Obviously, a couple of those were just horrific calls, but at the same time, you can't put yourself in the position for the refs to make those calls against you. You can't make contact, and even if it's light contact and you're not really affecting the play, these refs will still throw the flags. I mean, there was 3 really that were very bad in my mind. The Michael Davis holding that turned into pass interference, the Keenan Allen having a 65-yard touchdown call back because of an offensive pass interference. That was pretty questionable. And I even thought Dan Feeney's holding when he was the polling guard was pretty questionable as well. But either way, I mean, those are just excuses. You can't put yourself in position to have 10 penalties for 89 yards and really be the sole reason that the Dolphins were still in this game. I mean, you just can't have it. And John, I think the one thing that I liked that you said was just the Chargers coming out slow again. They didn't seem to come out energized. And I think at some point you have to question the game planning from both sides of the ball, but Ken Whisenhunt, I thought, had a decent game plan. You know, use Keenan Allen a lot as a decoy and get the rest of the players involved. But defensively, for Gus Bradley to come out and let the Dolphins smack him in the mouth like that and really should have put up 16 points in the first half, I feel like that's unacceptable for the Chargers to lack game planning that much. I mean, it was just like when the Chargers went to New England and the defensive game plan was terrible. It's not exactly the same, John, but at the same time, we should be seeing better game plans, especially against really bad teams like this. Yes, they pulled out a couple of trick plays, but that's not what they beat you on. They had a game plan to go up against your defense, and for them, it absolutely worked in the first half.
It did, and it's like Gus Bradley's basically being conservative with his game plan. He likes to do that zone coverage. You find the hole, you get to have the hole, basically. If your receiver can find a spot, you win that battle. But when is Gus Bradley going to say, screw you finding the spot, you got to beat our pass rush? When are we going to send the blitz? When are we going to be like the old Eagles back in the days when they would just, Andy Reid's Eagles would dial up some amazing blitzes, and if you could somehow find a way to hit the man coverage spots, you could beat the Eagles. If you couldn't, it was going to be a long day. When are we going to have something like that? The pass rushers we have, you add on like a Joey Bosa, a Melvin Ingram, even Nwosu. Like, we have guys that can really rush the passer. When Derwin James comes back, you'll have him and Desmond King to mix around. Like, when are we going to have some more dialed up blitzes that are actually schemable to confuse people and get the quarterback running out of the pocket or making bad throws? We're just sitting back and letting these teams pick us apart. Josh Rosen, who I think is overrated for his draft pick, was picking us apart. It was slowly just, oh, here's a spot. Bam, here's a spot. First down, here's a spot. And then touchdown, Devontae Parker. When are we going to just dial up the blitz and say, go ahead, try and stop us?
Well, and it's extremely frustrating just because you saw how easy it was for the Chargers to get in there with bringing an extra blitzer in the second half and how it just made Josh Rosen totally unravel and really changed the entire game. I mean, Desmond King, we'll get into him in the next segment talking about what went right. But yes, you had the players there. You had the players in place and you just didn't execute those moves. And I thought the end of the first half was another time where Gus Bradley kind of sat back, let his guys play soft zone coverage, and let the Dolphins end up getting a mid 50-yard field goal, which is unacceptable as well. But to me, my main thing of what went wrong is just you end up winning in the second half and you pulled away, which is all great, but it's not always going to be that easy. You cannot let teams keep hanging in there with you in the second half because it's going to bite you in the ass again like it already has this season. And you just can't do it if you're a good team. And in the second half when the Chargers possessed the ball for over 10 minutes on one drive and end that with a field goal, I'm all with that kind of game plan of shortening the game. But if you're shortening the game and ending up with field goals, that's just less time for you to put more points on the board. And I strongly disagree with that. But we do have one more segment getting into a more positive note on what went right coming up right after this. All right, boys, time to get into the last segment of the day, talking about what went right. And I'm excited about this because this is a game that we got to take some good things away from. And I thought that especially in the second half, the Chargers obviously pulled away by going on a 13-0 scoring run, which was nice to see considering they'd only scored 10 points in the second half, not including overtime, in their first three games of the season. So good to see them not totally dissolve in the second half and come out strongly and go get a win. And I think for me, one of the things that went right, David, Desmond King gets 2.5 sacks in this game. The Chargers end up getting 5 sacks and 1 interception, but they didn't do it the conventional way. I think Joey Bosa had half a sack, Tyler has half a sack, but Desmond King right now actually leads the Chargers with 2.5 sacks, and he got them all in one game. And I thought that was one huge bright spot in this game was the Chargers in the second half getting back to sending those blitzes off the edge, having Desmond King in the slot and coming untouched off the edge again. Couldn't be blocked by the running back and ended up getting 2.5 sacks. So for the Chargers, at least you're finding a way to get pressure, putting Josh Rosen and on the ground 4 times, and the other one was Preston Williams on a wide receiver pass. So I don't really count that one. But it was nice to see the Chargers finally get some pressure. And for Desmond King, after really not doing anything as a pass rusher last season, getting back to one of the things that really set him apart from a lot of DBs his first season.
It's good to see that Gus Bradley was putting Desmond King in a position to utilize that pass rushing skill set. He didn't do it a whole lot last year, and I think that's partly because Gus Bradley didn't put him in those positions to be able to do that, which is a detriment to him and his ability to get after the passer. I think putting Desmond King in this position, you see that he's going to provide some results. 2.5 sacks, that's a huge game. You absolutely got to love it, and hopefully you can see that more often, especially with Melvin Ingram's injury. Hopefully this will help take some pressure off of Joey Bosa so he's not expected to do the entire thing himself. We know he's going to be double-teamed a lot. They're definitely going to try to keep him out, so if you can find pass rush from other areas, whether that be Desmond King or Nchenna Nwosu or somebody else, that's only going to help the defense. Now, for me, my guy who, excuse me, for what I thought went right in this game was Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers had a phenomenal game. He had an insane 95.7 elite grade from PFF. He just felt like he was in command the entire day. He made great decisions. He also did really well under pressure. I mean, this is one thing. You just don't blitz Phillip Rivers because he's going to hurt you. And he just showcased it in this one. Just a phenomenal performance.
Well, and it comes after, you know, a couple of games where a lot of Charger fans questioning whether or not Phillip Rivers is still the answer. I mean, after Chargers losses, it's always going to happen with the fans calling for, you know, the head of Anthony Lynn, the head of Phillip Rivers, and saying he's over the hill and saying he can't move around enough and throw outside the pocket like these young quarterbacks can. And then he comes out and has a game like this where he completes 80% of his passes, goes 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and just looks like the best player hands down on the field. Leads a team to not have to punt for the entire game, even when they turned it over on downs. Dontrell Inman had that crazy catch that he almost caught in between his legs that ended up not being a catch after they reviewed it. So, I mean, even that series, Phillip Rivers gave them a chance to keep moving down the field and potentially get more points. And obviously, if Keenan Allen doesn't get that offensive pass interference called against him, that's another 65 yards and a touchdown for Phillip Rivers as well. So I thought Phillip Rivers was phenomenal again. And this is the type of game where you just really get to see Phillip Rivers just knowing exactly what the defense is trying to do to him at all times and exploiting that over and over again. John, what did you see that went right in this game that you wanted to talk about?
For me, what went right in this game was David mentioned how well Phillip Rivers did. Let's look at the other side of that. How about all the receivers that we had? We had guys like Dontrell Inman stepping up. He was our leading receiver. We had Jeremy Davis. We had Kendricks. Tremaine Pope even contributed in the passing game. Sean Colkin caught one pass that moved us closer to the goal line, even though he tore his Achilles afterward. Andre Patton. We moved the ball around to all these different guys, and none of them are your regular starters. The only guys on that list basically that are your regular starters are Austin Ekeler and Keenan Allen. Everybody else somehow, some way was used unlike other games. Even Derek Watt caught a 21-yard pass. When you move the ball around and these guys are actually contributing and being successful, that is a great thing to see. And Phillip Rivers has a history of doing this when he's had that one season where he completed a pass to like 14 or 18 different players. And here he is doing it again in this game where he completes it to 9 different players.
Yeah, I think he had completed it to 8 different players in the first half in this game, really spreading it around. And to me, John, it was even more important to see when they were going to those guys. I mean, you saw Andre Patton convert a big third down. You know, Sean Colkin gets you a first down near the goal line. You have Dontrell Inman converting on third down. Lance Kendricks had a couple big first down grabs. And Phillip Rivers is trusting these guys that some of them just came off the streets a couple weeks ago to play important roles in these games. And to their credit, for the most part, after having a few games where everybody seemed to be dropping the ball, the Chargers seem to really come back in this game. And it makes you wonder why some of these guys aren't getting more snaps in front of guys like Travis Benjamin. I mean, these guys came in and produced. Dontrell Inman in a bigger role produced 5 for 76. Lance Kendrick goes 2 for 37. Andre Patton, I thought, looked pretty good as well. So definitely good for those auxiliary pieces to get involved because they needed it. The Dolphins were determined to limit Keenan Allen as much as they could. So I definitely thought that was something that was good in this game. And even though it was going up against a very bad defensive line, I will give credit to the Chargers offensive line, at least pass protecting. I thought run blocking, this was not a good game for the Chargers offensive line, but they do only allow 1 sack. They did give Phillip Rivers a decent amount of time to throw on a few different occasions. And David, that was nice being able to see Phillip Rivers at least have a little bit of time. And you just gave us all the Phillip Rivers stats. That doesn't happen if Phillip Rivers is on his back after every play. The offensive line, even against a bad team, came in and had the game in pass protection that they really needed to have. So you'll definitely take that as an improvement, especially when you get to see a guy like Forrest Lamp. But this is what happens when you give Phillip Rivers this much time. I know it's a terrible Miami defense, but if you keep the pocket clean enough for him to step up and make those couple of throws on the run like you did in this game, that's plenty. That's all we really need to see. We just now need to see it against some better competition.
Absolutely. This is definitely a great start, and hopefully this is a confidence booster for that offensive line that they were able to keep Phillip Rivers mostly clean besides having Sean Culkin try to attempt to block a pass rusher for some ungodly reason I don't understand. But besides that, they definitely performed fairly well. Another thing that I thought was really good in this game that went right was getting Forrest Lamp involved, getting Drew Tranquil involved, getting Nazir Adderley involved, getting some of those guys that we've really been wanting to see out there and in the game playing a little bit. Even though it wasn't a lot, it's definitely a start and something, a step in the right direction.
Well, and we cannot mention what went right in this show without sending a shout out to Ty Long, who, after going out there and being absolutely dreadful in week two against the Lions and pretty much costing the Chargers in some way that game, missing two field goals where he loses by 3 points. Every other game, he's been perfect. He goes 3 for 3 in this one, ends up hitting a career-long 51-yard field goal. Totally just crazy that Ty Long is right now the Chargers punter and kicker, and they seem to be fine with it. And he seems to have really settled down and is now excelling at the position while also handling punting and kickoff. So can't end the show without talking about how good Ty Long has been, because even though he didn't punt in this game, so really he was only playing kicker, Ty Long has done both exceptionally well outside of one game so far this season. And he's really changed the Chargers special teams almost single-handedly, which has been a thorn in their side over the last few seasons. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow because it's Crossover Wednesday. So we're going to talk with Cody Rourke and the Locked On Broncos for the Wednesday crossover edition of the show. So if you guys have any questions, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to ask us there. Or if you guys want to call with any questions this week, we want to do a mailbag and voicemail show soon. Call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail line at 323-524-7924. Every Chargers voicemail we get gets played on the show. And if you guys don't already, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. But we'll be back with you guys tomorrow on Crossover Wednesday. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.